Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup, filling in today for Neil Strausser. Where 15 ballots failed, the 16th succeeded. And Italy at last has a new president. Sherry Gilbert reports from Rome.
After 3 weeks of bitter political infighting that threatened the stability of the current Italian government, Italy not only has a new president, but its first socialist head of state. The country's seventh president and the successor to Giovanni Leone, who resigned because of corruption charges on June 15th, is Sandro Pertini, a veteran socialist and a well-known resistance fighter who was once jailed for 7 years by fascist dictator Benito Mussolini. From the start, Pertini appeared to be the candidate most likely to win support from the five parties, including the Christian Democrats, the Socialists, and the Communists, who backed the government. But there was initial opposition from the Christian Democrats, who were angered by socialists' insistence that the new president be a socialist or else. Warm applause broke out in Parliament at the announcement that Pertini had won with 832 votes out of 995 votes cast. Part of the applause was clearly relief that the strain of the 10-day election is now over. But most Italians also appear convinced that Pertini is an honest man, who as president will help heal this country's economic and social wounds. Shari Gilbert for CBS News. Rome.
Sporadic rifle fire was heard this morning in some parts of Beirut, but for the most part, the latest ceasefire between Syrian troops and right-wing Christian militia groups appears to be holding. Even so, Doug Tunnell reports that the situation is trigger-taut.
Snipers have taken over where big guns left off a day ago in Beirut's Christian enclave. The rightist militiamen there are still on full alert behind their barricades. Across the rooftops of the city, Syrian units of the Arab Deterrent Force here are standing by. Families are still spending the nights in basement shelters there, going out by day to collect food and supplies. By mid-afternoon, most streets are empty except for the gunmen wheeling from one checkpoint to another on patrol. According to press reports here, President Elias Sarkis has decided to freeze his resignation after appeals by ambassadors from several Western nations, including the United States. But Beirut's independent An-Nahar newspaper says this morning that Sarkis will be ready to pack his bags if the fighting starts again. And in Lebanon's Christian neighborhoods, there are few who are convinced that it's really over. Doug Tunnell, CBS News, Beirut.
Egyptian President Sadat, still sounding optimistic about chances for a peace settlement in the Middle East, discussed the outlook today in Vienna with Austrian Chancellor Bruno Kreisky. Sadat is also meeting with West Germany's former Chancellor Willy Brandt, and tomorrow he'll confer with Israeli opposition leader Shimon Peres. Austrian officials say a joint meeting of all four appears likely during the weekend. Truck drivers angered by Austria's new highway taxes today ended their week-long protest blockade of many highways and border crossings. The blockade was a failure. The new taxes will stand. Two of the Soviet Union's best-known Jewish dissidents are going on trial day after tomorrow. Anatoly Sharansky in Moscow, Alexander Ginzburg in Kaluga, 100 miles from the Soviet capital. Sharansky is charged with high treason, Ginzburg with anti-Soviet agitation and propaganda. Washington is concerned and upset about both cases, and CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb explains why.
It is the timing of the trials that has disturbed key officials. The Russians could have brought Sharansky and Ginsburg to trial at any time in recent months, but they chose to do so on the eve of Secretary of State Vance's departure for Geneva and another round of strategic arms talks there with Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko. That suggests that the Russians might have decided to challenge and needle President Carter, both at the same time. Challenge him because he has always said that there is no linkage between his human rights campaign and the SALT talks. And if that is the case, the president would have to go ahead with SALT no matter what the Russians do to Sharansky. The action also needles the president because Sharansky is being tried on treason charges, and the president has stated often and publicly that Sharansky has had no connection whatever with the CIA. In any case, the U.S. is warning the Russians to go easy on the dissidents or else run the risk of damaging Soviet-American relations even more. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
Two men convicted of spying for Vietnam were sentenced yesterday to 15 years imprisonment. Sentence was imposed in Alexandria, Virginia federal court on Ronald Humphrey, a former employee of the U.S. Information Agency, and David Truong, a Vietnamese expatriate. They were found guilty in May by a federal court jury on six counts of espionage, conspiracy, theft of government documents, and failure to register as foreign agents. Both men protested their innocence, and both plan to appeal. For large parts of Minnesota, this has been a week to remember, and also a week that everybody would just as soon forget, including as it did some of the worst weather on record. Rich Holter of Station WCCO brings us up to date.
2 days of tornadoes and flash flooding in Minnesota have left 12 people dead, some 3,000 to 4,000 homes and businesses damaged or destroyed, and property losses that could reach $100 million. Governor Rudy Perpich has requested a federal disaster declaration for a nine-county area of southeastern Minnesota, an area where more than 5,000 people were chased from their homes by flash floods in Rochester and Austin, floods that killed five people and cost an estimated $75 million in damages. And damage figures have yet to come in from four central Minnesota counties, where up to 6 inches of rain killed three people, washed out roads, filled basements, and backed up sewers. It's the worst flooding most Minnesotans have ever seen, and state climatologist Earl Keenast says that's because the 20 inches of rain that has fallen in the past 40 days is the first such occurrence since 1877. Rich Holter for CBS News, Minneapolis.
Another unpleasant example of the force of nature is plaguing Philadelphia, and we'll hear about that from Jerry Grove of Station WCAU.
Philadelphia International Airport is a battleground between the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the lowly Japanese beetle. Federal officials have designated the airport a regulated airport. That means that each plane that heads towards seven western states or Canada gets sprayed inside with a pesticide to protect food and water on the planes, as well as keep the beetles from going west. Dave McCullough, a spokesman for the USDA, explains why the precautions are being taken.
The main objection is the nature of this beetle. He feeds on between 250 and 300 host plants, and of course the state of California has a very extensive agricultural economy, and they're quite concerned about that thing getting established out there like it is established here in the Northeast, and they're doing everything they can to keep it from getting established out there and causing maybe millions of dollars of damage to their crops each year.
The battle goes on, but no one knows who's winning. Jerry Grove for CBS News, Philadelphia.
A different type of beetle, known as the lesser mealworm, has showed up in central Maine, invading several small towns by the millions or perhaps the billions. More than 100 homes are crawling with them, and some residents have been forced to move out. An official of the state health department says people are desperate. They're sweeping out quarts full of the bugs from their bedrooms every night before they go to bed. Health officials haven't decided yet how to get rid of them. Some farms and ranches in eastern Colorado have become infested with grasshoppers, and they are causing so much damage that Governor Richard Lamb has called a special session of the state legislature to consider the problem.